This is WIDR Kalamazoo. You're listening to 89.1 Wider FM, your source for radio evolution, online at widrfm.org. I am Stephen Rick, and this is Sight and Vision, exploring what it means to be seen as visually impaired and gaining relative perspective through the personal stories of those who see clearly the need for understanding. Welcome, everyone. Today, our guest is James Hull. Welcome and thank you for being here, Mr. Hull.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Hull, starting at the beginning, we're looking back at first. Where does your story with the visual impairment begin?
Back in 2002, I was wrapping up my undergraduate degree at Michigan State University. I graduated in December of that year, and the next day, I began having symptoms from an autoimmune disease called Devic's disease, which took away my eyesight pretty much overnight. Prior to that, I had 20/20 vision, and then within 24 hours, I had just barely any light perception. So that's been about 23 years ago now, just about. And so that's when my experiences in dealing with blindness started.
So this was a very sudden transition for you?
Completely sudden. There was no previous notice. I had no idea that it was going to happen. It took about 4 months for the doctors to actually be able to explain to me what had happened and to explain that my eyesight was never going to return. And then from there, I had to begin to adjust to living my life as a visually impaired person and learning how to advocate for myself with a disability. And thankfully, I had a lot of wonderful family resources around me. I had enlisted the services of the now Bureau of Services for Blind Persons, and they provided me with some supports and training so that I could make that adjustment. But yeah, it was definitely very sudden.
My diagnosis, RP, is progressive. It's gradual. So we have a different experience. What was that first 24 hours for you? How did you get through that 24 hours?
It was absolutely terrifying, to be perfectly honest. You know, I really had no idea what was happening. As the disease went, it didn't just render me blind. I had a lot of other physical effects as well. So I lost about a third of my body weight. So I was very concerned about my overall health, not just my eyesight. So those first 24 hours were really quite terrifying as far as not knowing how it was going to end up. Mm-hmm. By the time that I had actually received my diagnosis and the prognosis that my eyesight would not return, to be perfectly honest, there was almost a sense of relief. At that time, I was married, and my wife and I went out and had a celebratory dinner. As crazy as it sounds, celebrating the fact that I was blind, because that was all that I was. I wasn't going to die. I still had a life to look forward to. I just had to find a different way to move forward with that life and to understand what blindness meant and how I could adapt.
That time up until your diagnosis, because I know other people who lost overnight as well, that would have been harrowing. That would have been, as you say, terrifying, because you, in my thinking, you're right. I would have thought it was anything from A to Z. And at that point, I completely understand, but like why you would be celebratory, I would be doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as you said, I mean, and that's quite a thing to say. It was just blindness. When you were diagnosed, did you share the news, or for some reason, were you compelled to carry that weight alone, professionally or personally? Did you have to manage that diagnosis? Or by that time, was there no option but to make this information public to your friends and family?
Well, actually, as fate would have it, everything, the gods kind of intervened in that for me. I have an identical twin brother who has not been afflicted by this autoimmune disease. He still has 20/20 vision. But I received my actual diagnosis about 5 days before his wedding. And I was standing as his best man. So there was no real way to avoid it. What I was very conscious of was the fact that it was his wedding. And again, it was just blindness. I wasn't in any other sort of physical or medical peril. So I made it a very big point not to make an issue out of it until after that. So I kind of kept it to myself for a week. I told my immediate family, some of my closest friends, but I didn't want to take the focus off of him. That was his week, you know. But obviously at the reception, all the rest of our extended family and friends saw me. I was there. So, you know, there was no real hiding it at that point. And to a certain extent, that was a bit of a relief. I got to address it all at once with everybody all at once. And it didn't catch anybody like individually by surprise. I didn't have to worry about keeping track of who knew and who didn't and who I didn't have an opportunity to explain it to. You know, people just cycled through that evening, you know, just in conversations, and I was able to explain the situation and, you know, help them to get an understanding of what it was that I would be dealing with. And everybody was very receptive to that, you know, and it still allowed me to not sort of steal the limelight away from where it needed to be at that moment, which was the focus on my brother and his wedding. You know, certainly way more important, you know, because that's his lifelong commitment to somebody else. This is just a, and some people might take offense at the way I say this, but blindness is just an inconvenience that we have to learn how to accommodate ourselves in our own lives. You know, and that's how I've always perceived it, is it's just something that I have to deal with. Other people have their own crosses to bear as well. You know, and so from that perspective, you know, I didn't have to hide it. And I also wasn't really given a choice about how to present it. It just sort of was laid in my lap that way.
At that time, you were relieved for obvious reasons. You were relieved.
Yes.
There was some buoyancy, some almost, if I can say, joy at announcing this. And then you were given that opportunity to tell everyone. Everyone was grouped together at the same place, at the same time. So it was an opportunity for you to just tell them a singular story at one time, conveniently. Was that pivotal or important for you and your own personal acceptance?
Acceptance for me was, you know, the first couple of months was a bit of a challenge. Acceptance for me came actually prior to that announcement. It came prior to actually having a solid diagnosis. I happened to be over at my father's house, and I was just sitting on the couch, and he came home from work and just looked at me and said, "Well, look, you're not going to be doing this the rest of your life." He said, "You can sit back and you can feel sorry for yourself and you can say, why me? But the simple reality is, why not you? You are no better than anybody else. You're just as likely to get sick as anybody else. The question is, what are you going to do about it?" You know, and he literally grabbed the phone book. You know, for those of you too young to remember, a phone book was an actual book with all the phone numbers of everybody listed in it.
It was.
And we flipped through the phone book and tracked down different services that might be available for people who are blind. You know, at that time, we didn't know that the blindness would be permanent, but we did know that it was going to be for a little while and that there were services out there and I might as well avail myself of them. You know, so he was the one who really got me to accept the fact that this was going to be my new reality and that there was nothing I was going to be able to do to change it. But there were, you know, I could control how I reacted to it. And so he was a very big motivator in how I reacted to it.
Would you say that generally there was life before vision loss and life after vision loss? Or do you think it's more like analogous to different chapters in the storybook of your life?
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that this morning. And I was trying to decide if I really would say that there were two different, you know, stages, you know, when I was sighted and when I lost my eyesight. And I guess from my perspective, really, there isn't. There's just life. You know, certainly the blindness was a very significant change, but I've gone through other significant moments in life that caused similar types of changes. You know, I was married and then divorced. I had a period before, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I had a period before her and a period after her. They're not chapters. It's all just a singular story. It's just different plot twists and narrative mechanisms, I guess, as it were, that you see yourself rolling through, and you know, they lead up to the next event and the next part of the story. So it's not really a before and an after so much as a progression, a continuing timeline going forward.
So is vision loss the worst that can happen to a person?
Absolutely not. You know, I'll be 100% honest. Losing my eyesight, you know, looking back on it, was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I mentioned that I graduated from Michigan State University. I graduated with a degree in English literature. Don't ask me what I was going to do with it, because I have absolutely no clue. So I had just dropped $40,000 on a bachelor's degree with no job prospects, no goal or objective for what I was going to do. You know, losing my eyesight literally the next day helped me to find a path, to actually find a goal. I received such amazing services from the Bureau of Services for Blind Persons that it really made me want to help other people who were in a similar situation. And thankfully, I've been able to find employment doing that and helping blind individuals to realize their own personal goals and dreams. You know, in addition, it has brought a whole series of amazing people into my life that I know that I would not have met or had the opportunity to work with if I had not lost my eyesight. Because, you know, there's just no logical reason that our paths would have crossed.
During that transition, the years since diagnosis, how has that changed you emotionally? In particular, do you actually see yourself as a different person now?
I think I'm able to see myself as a more confident person. When I still had my eyesight, confidence, I'm not going to say I ever particularly struggled with confidence, but I had less opportunities to demonstrate to myself that I could accomplish tasks. Because it just, you know, traveling to a different country and seeing different parts of the world just didn't seem like it was that much of an accomplishment. So I didn't need to really worry about whether or not I could do it. So I never did. You know, having lost my eyesight and hearing other people and their shock and amazement at some of the things that I take for granted that I do now allows me to build that confidence in myself to know that I can do those things. You know, so from that perspective, I would say emotionally, that's probably been the largest change.
Physically, like your daily activities, how did the change in vision affect your daily life?
When I first lost my eyesight, I was really particularly concerned that I wouldn't be able to enjoy or do the things that I had done previously. I was an avid hunter. I loved going to the theater and seeing live stage productions. I enjoyed being outdoors, you know, being out hiking and things like that. And I was very concerned that I would not be able to continue to do those things. I just, you know, when I first lost my eyesight, I didn't see a path to be able to do them. And this is where, again, you know, having the right network of people around you can make a huge difference. You know, shortly after losing my eyesight, I lost my eyesight in December. So I guess not that shortly, but because hunting season isn't until October. So my father and I spent about 8 months trying to figure out how it was that I would be able to hunt again. And that involved doing some research online. It involved reaching out to different organizations that sponsored disabled hunts and things like that. And we were able to actually devise a system using a particular type of gun sight so that I could continue to hunt. As a matter of fact, I've actually shot more deer since I went blind than I shot when I could still see. You know, going to the theater, I still continued to go even after losing my eyesight. There was a little bit of a lag, you know, just finding people who were willing to go with me. And I learned to experience the theater in a different way. I didn't necessarily need to see the actors on the stage and how they were moving. I got to focus more on feeling the tone of their voice and how they were presenting their character. Now, I will say in the last several years, more theaters have begun doing audio description, which has been wonderful. I actually just bought a season pass for the Wharton Center in East Lansing to see their entire Broadway series with audio description, and I'm really looking forward to that. You know, and that has, again, continued to enhance that experience. So, you know, I didn't lose any of the activities that I had previously done. I just had to spend a little bit of time and work with the people around me to find creative ways to continue to enjoy them.
How did your change in vision, how did that affect the people around you? It sounds like they responded really quickly, actually, and they were very supportive.
You know, my family is very close-knit. As a matter of fact, even today, we don't live more than 15 miles away from each other, you know, all of us. So for them, you know, after the initial shock wore off and the realization that I wasn't dying, I was just blind, settled in, they had that shared sense of relief, you know, as well that I had, that, okay, it's just blindness. And they've always been very supportive of helping me to find ways to adapt and accommodate to that blindness. You know, I will say that one of the greatest things that's happened is as I built up my personal confidence and been able to demonstrate that to them, you know, and this goes into my extended family as well, they see exactly what it is that I do and can do. Mm-hmm. Their supports for me get that much better because they realize I don't need assistance in finding my way to the bathroom in their home. What I need assistance with is, you know, getting to their home so that I can visit them, you know, because there's not public transit. So they might have to come by and pick me up before I join them for dinner. But that once I'm there, it's just me, you know. And so they've been very accepting of it, very accommodating and willing to ask what it is that I need without overstepping their bounds. And I think that's a great lesson for anybody who's dealing with somebody with a disability. Don't just assume that you know what they need. Ask them and listen, truly listen to what they need and provide that level of support. And I've been very blessed that the people around me have really looked at it from that perspective of asking me and then providing what I'm asking for and not just what they assume I might need.
What concerned you most about your visual decline or vision loss?
I think when I first lost my eyesight,
yeah, I mean, there's initial joy there.
Well, there was.
Right? But then after that, it's like, okay, now what? What am I going to do, you know, having vision loss?
Well, I guess that was a big part of it. I mentioned how I graduated with a degree that even when I was sighted, I didn't necessarily have a clear career path. So then I felt like those paths got limited even further by my vision loss. So I was really terrified.
Kind of reality set in.
Exactly. You know, I was really very nervous about what kind of a job might I be qualified for? What kind of a job was even available to a person who was blind? And that's where I really have to give a lot of credit to my vocational rehabilitation counselor. She did a very good job of helping to educate me on what was available, what types of jobs blind people did, and what kinds of accommodations and accessibility software and things were out there to assist me in being able to do whatever it was that I decided, which then landed me right back in the same problem. I didn't know what I wanted to do before. So now I realize that the blindness is just an impediment, but not a barrier. So I'm still stuck with, so now what am I going to do with this degree? You know, but thankfully it worked itself out. I was able to translate that into a good job doing a version of blind rehabilitation myself.
And I have to ask, because we're in the United States, you haven't mentioned driving. And typically everyone's worried about driving. We can no longer drive. Was that an issue for you? And how big of an issue, or was it a non-issue?
I physically went into the Secretary of State and surrendered my driver's license. And I have to admit, that was one of the emotionally most difficult days of dealing with blindness, was understanding that I was never going to drive a car again. Now, it doesn't bother me that much. Sure, it would be convenient if I could, but it's just something that you have to plan for. At the time, it was very frustrating, but you learn to adapt. That's all. You don't have a choice, really. You can be frustrated by it. You can be angry or upset, but it's not going to change the circumstance. So as opposed to wasting my energy on being angry and upset, I chose to put my energy into finding solutions. I mentioned that I was married when I first went blind, so my wife and I lived together, so she did all the driving. After I began living alone, that became slightly more challenging, but only to the fact that I had to schedule things a little bit better. Because again, that resource network that I was able to have around me, friends, family, they were available and willing to assist me so long as I could schedule it in a time that they were available. So it just meant that I had to plan a little bit better. Today, if I could drive, if I could get the ability to drive, I think I would love driving. But the more I ride in cars, the less interested I am in dealing with other drivers. So maybe, better for my blood pressure that I don't drive anymore.
You talked about that accelerated pace, which, you recovered from 18 months. You found a work and a career and a future. So was there something that you feared after diagnosis that turned out to be something you didn't have to worry about?
I guess kind of a funny story. It goes back to that, it's only blindness, as opposed to death. When I first went blind and they first gave me a diagnosis, they gave me a study that had been conducted on the autoimmune disease that I have. I mentioned that it's Devic's disease is what it's called. And I read the study very carefully because it talked a lot about some other potential physical side effects that I might experience. Some of them included nerve damage to the point where you'd be unable to walk and things of that nature. Which again, if I'm accepting blindness, I was willing to accept a wheelchair as well. But the thing that was really the most unnerving thing that I read in that case study was the average life expectancy of individuals that participated in that study was only about 3.5 years. And that was mildly disconcerting, but I was going to be grateful for the 3.5 years. And it wasn't until 3 months later when I went back to see my neurologist that he explained that the study that they gave me was abbreviated. And the average age of the people that participated in the study was 78. So, 3.5 years still put them at 81. I was 23. That's
an important detail.
Yeah, exactly. He said their life expectancy wasn't cut short by the disease. It was cut short by just their general age. And so that was one thing I was grateful that I was mildly afraid of that I didn't have to deal with was a shortened life expectancy. I was, on a more serious note, I was very concerned about being a parent. I had a lot of concerns that, and not just the, how do I change a diaper? How am I going to feed this child? My biggest concern was really, how is my child going to receive me? How are they going to handle the fact that I am blind? And I was very, very nervous about that right up until about a month before my daughter was born. My father was the one I was talking to about this and expressing my concern. And he reminded me, my grandfather worked for General Motors. And while he was at General Motors, he was involved in an auto accident where he ended up losing his leg. And this was all before I was born. And growing up, he was just my grandfather. I had actually no cognitive idea that he was disabled. It was just that's who he was. And so once I, began thinking about it from those terms and thinking that that was how my daughter was going to perceive me, I wasn't disabled. I was just dad. It's just her dad was slightly different than another kid's dad, who's going to be slightly different than the next dad, So that was a fear that I had manifested in my head, that I would have a challenge making that connection with my daughter that never came to fruition. In 13 years, she's never looked at me differently because I'm blind. I'm sure she's taken advantage, thinking things out of the kitchen enough from time to time, but, you know, I would probably have done the same thing. So
you had more important concerns than whether or not you could drive?
Far more. You know, the driving is just a means to get from point A to point B. Doesn't matter if I'm the one doing the driving or if I'm riding in a car, in a bus.
Yeah. You know, life was still happening for you. Life was still happening.
Absolutely.
You had these other roles, these other hats to wear.
Absolutely.
Formal training. We're talking about either vocational rehabilitation or living skills. Have you received any kind of formal training?
I have.
And is it something you'd recommend?
I have, and without a doubt, I would recommend it. I mentioned my short time in going from blindness to employment. And a large part of that, I will give credit to the vocational rehabilitation process. You know, not only did I have a counselor who helped me on the vocational side to identify the types of employment that I might be interested in and assist me in pursuing those opportunities, but I also had the opportunity to spend about 4 months at the Bureau of Services for Blind Persons Training Center in Kalamazoo. And that was probably one of the largest confidence boosts that I had. To be sure, I learned amazing skills, and I worked with an outstanding staff of individuals who really helped me to learn independent orientation and mobility, how to use the accessibility features within computers, how to handle daily living skills and adaptive kitchen skills, But I also found it very empowering. You know, while I was there, they have a wood shop there, and I literally made a hope chest for my wife, you know, using power tools and things like that, and gaining the confidence to be able to do that through that formal training was very empowering. And it did a lot to maintain my self-esteem. You know, there are always moments, everybody has them, but I think with blindness, sometimes they creep up on you, you know, forgive the pun, but unseen, you know, where you have those moments that you have doubts in your self-worth and your personal abilities. Having that formal training at our training center there gave me a significant boost in my confidence and enhanced the skills that I thought that I had, and really refine them to a point that I was independent and able to be successful and chart my own course.
Yeah, building confidence at that time, was that important to you?
It really was. Like I said, I was, you know, accepting of the blindness, but I was nervous about which way to go. And I was nervous about, you know, when they presented, you know, oh, you could do X or you could do Y or you could do Z as potential career paths. I wasn't confident that I could necessarily do X, Y, and Z. You know, and so going and getting that formal training and building the confidence in my abilities gave me the confidence to apply for and seek out jobs in X, Y, and Z related field. You know, so it made a significant difference in my professional path, but it also made a significant difference in my personal path. I was no longer concerned about, you know, being able to take care of myself. You know, I mean, I've known sighted people who, you know, later on would go through a divorce and they would struggle to take care of themselves because they didn't have the confidence in living independently, living alone. I was never particularly concerned about that because I already knew from my formal training that I had the skills to be able to do it. You know, so that it buoyed not only my professional, but my personal attitudes as well.
Hey, Mr. Holt, let's talk about what's happening right now. You've been very open and honest about your personal story. So I'd like to ask, actually, how you feel about what is called disclosure, or the sharing of visual status or condition. Are you comfortable with that? You seem very comfortable. And why?
You know, that's actually something that I've gone back and forth on with disclosure, and I think a part of it has to do with what you're attempting to do. You know, one of the things that makes me comfortable with the idea of disclosure is you're not going to be able to hide it anyway. You know, I walk with a white cane. When I walk into a room, everybody sees that white cane. There's no question about why I have it. You know, most people, sighted people and visually impaired people, we all know a white cane means you're blind. So if I can't hide it, and I don't really have any particular desire to because it's going to come out anyway, then I may as well be upfront about it, because at least then I get to control the narrative. If I tell someone I cannot see, but I can explain to them why that doesn't matter, then I don't leave them to guess about why it might matter.
You're listening to 89.1 Wider FM, your source for radio evolution, online at widrfm.org. Referring to that 20 years of experience, do changes in one's sight impair one's ability to be professional, do you think, or function in a professional environment?
No. I don't believe that a change in somebody's sight changes their ability to be or to be able to function in a professional environment. You know, I do believe that each of us is an individual and each of us brings certain skills, and soft skills in particular are what I'm thinking about at this moment, that might lend themselves more or less to a professional environment. I think some people are not just by their personality tailored to that. And, you know, that's perfectly fine. You don't have to work or live in a professional environment. That's a choice. You know, but I don't think that blindness dictates that. All that blindness dictates is the style and manner that you're going to participate, not your participation.
So the professional qualities one needs to perform and deliver, say, even from the starting of an interview, whether you're visually impaired or fully sighted, those professional qualities, are they different for the sighted versus visually impaired?
I think that they are the same. I think that a blind individual needs to work harder to make sure that they're demonstrating them. You know, a sighted person will walk into a room and immediately look everybody in the eye when they're saying hello, and they don't think anything of it. A blind person, you need to make sure that you're making that conscious effort to walk into a room and look and find where the individuals are and look at them when you're introducing yourself. When you sit down at the interview table, you need to make sure that you are looking at the person who is asking you the question. You know, if it's a round robin where it's a panel and there are three people, look at the person that's asking you the question. Don't look at the person who just asked you a question. You know, it's making that connection. Fair or not fair, you know, it's incumbent on a visually impaired person to make the non-disabled person feel comfortable with you. And so that means we have to learn the cues that the sighted world live by and to the best of our ability, participate in and demonstrate those.
Is it an oversimplification to say those of us who are visually impaired absolutely have to prepare to perform in a sighted world?
I don't think that it is an oversimplification to say that. I don't necessarily think it's fair. But, you know, one of the things that I've been more than willing to accept is that life is not fair. You know, I think that it is important for somebody who is visually impaired to understand that 1% of the world population is legally blind. That means 99% aren't. You know, blindness also is very scary to the sighted world. I had read one time that of all of the things that people are most afraid of, death is actually number three. Blindness is number one. So, you know, making for a sighted individual to make the conscious choice to bend their world to accommodate 1% that represents something that they are most scared of, I don't think that's a reasonable ask. I don't see it happening. It should, because I value inclusion. I valued inclusion actually before I lost my eyesight, and certainly a lot more now. I know that I have a lot to bring to the table, that if people don't include me, they're never going to experience, you know, and I know that I am not alone as a disabled person with having a lot to bring to the table. But I think that we do need to prepare ourselves mentally for the idea that if we want to be invited to the table, we have to accept that they're the ones who are dealing the cards. And so in order to get a hand dealt, you have to convince them to deal you the cards. So you almost have to play by their rules a little bit. And as you're playing by their rules, you can begin to educate them and make that change from the inside. You're never going to make it from the outside. Just standing outside and yelling and screaming, that's not going to accomplish it. You need to engage and involve yourself and demonstrate why it's valuable for them to consider and be inclusive.
All right, work from within rather than breaking it better sort of thing.
Yes.
Generally, are we looking at an environment where it is easier, simpler for visually impaired people to find and secure employment than years ago, than in the past? Is the trend improving?
Yes, I believe that it is. You know, I've seen it in personal experience. I think that technology is amazing. 20 years ago, I could get a talking watch, a white cane, and a screen reader for my computer. You know, I literally just got 2 weeks ago a pair of glasses that will take a picture and describe the entire scene to me. You know, it will tell me, you know, you're in a room with light green walls and a couch, and the couch is this color. And with AI, I can ask questions and get more information. Going back to that, you know, being able to receive the information. The technology is a true game changer in helping blind individuals to find work. One of the other barriers that I've really seen over the years that blind individuals have had about finding work is transportation to or from the workplace. And, you know, for a blind individual, one of the upsides of the pandemic is that the idea of working from home has become more standardized. I mean, more employers are willing to consider that. They look at what their particular needs are. And even if it isn't every day, you know, maybe a couple of days a week, that helps to remove that transportation barrier.
Are these advices that you would give to a visually impaired person who wants to achieve, say, like your level of success or even seeking employment? What kind of professional advice would you give? The transportation, for example, would that be one?
That would be. You know, I mentioned about controlling the narrative. You know, when you're controlling the narrative, you have to look at it from the global perspective. What are your needs and how might this employer be able to accommodate those needs? But you have to bring the ideas. Don't rely on on the individual who is interviewing you to think of, I really like this guy, but, you know, how's he going to make it to work every day? He says he has transportation issues. Well, let me think on that and then I'll offer him the job. They're not going to think on it. They're going to go to the next candidate who doesn't have those kinds of issues. So you have to be prepared to provide solutions, you know, and so think about what those potential solutions might look like. With that said, make sure that your solutions are realistic. You can't ask for the moon, you know, when you're asking for an accommodation, because that's going to be just as off-putting. But you can say, you know, I do have some transportation issues. You know, obviously I do not drive. So, you know, what might be an effective way for us to deal with that is if this position would allow me to work from home a couple of days a week. You know, does this position need to be in the office? And, you know, if you can give me notice, a week's notice, when you need me in the office on an unscheduled day, then I can absolutely make those, schedule that travel. you know, it's all I'm asking is that you not drop it on me the day of or something like that. You know, so if you bring the solutions with you, then, and the solutions are realistic and practical, at that point, then your skills begin talking for you again. And then you're being compared to the other applicants on the level playing field because they don't have to think of a way to accommodate you. You've already provided it for them.
On the flip side of that, is there something you would say, please never do this when either interviewing or trying to secure a position somewhere?
You know, one of the biggest things I would say as far as something you would never want to do would be advice I would give to any job seeker, not just a job seeker who is blind. Don't ever say you can't do something. You can say, I've never done something. That's honest. But don't say you can't do something. You know, you can say, you know, if they ask you to do something that you've never done, you've never thought about, what you can say is, well, I've never done that before. And I would have to think about how I might be able to do it, but I'm sure that I can figure it out. But don't say, I can't do that. You know, it's because there's always a way. You know, and
never admit to what you don't know.
Absolutely. You know, but with that said, you know, sometimes we don't know things and it's okay to say that. It's okay to be honest. Because if you are presenting, you know, if I'm hiring somebody and they are presenting to me a motivation and a desire to solve a problem, it doesn't necessarily matter what that problem is. If they, I can teach anything about the business. I can't teach motivation. Be motivated. Be energized. Be excited at the opportunity to tackle something that you've never done before. But don't ever say you can't do something. Because that's all they're going to remember about the interview is this person said they can't do it. This other person didn't. You know, so you will never get a job if you say you can't do something.
Does your blindness define you?
No. No, blindness does not define me at all. I am not a, you know, I do not think of myself as a blind person. I think of myself as a person who is blind. I am also a person who is a father, a son, a husband. You know, I am a person who loves to travel. I love the outdoors, you know. As a person, I have so many facets that make up who I am. And blindness is just one of those components.
Does your professional experience, does that help you manage your daily living? Or does your daily living influence your management style?
I would say yes and yes. I definitely think that my professional work, you know, helping blind individuals does help me personally. Because it helps me to stay on the forefront as it relates to technology. You know, blindness is a very unique disability because it is ever-changing. If you need a wheelchair, you get a wheelchair. Wheelchairs have been pretty much the same for the last 100 years. I mean, you know, if you're deaf, then, you know, they have some accommodations, but the accommodations are pretty stable. They don't change on a regular basis. Whereas blindness, the technology is ever changing. You know, there's something new coming out. It seems like every other month, you know, but practically speaking, probably every year there's a new device that is incorporating technology in a new and unique way. And so because of the work that I do, I've been able to stay on top of that and have a better understanding of what is out there. It's also helped me to see what I don't need. You know, the latest and greatest gadget is fun, but how often am I actually going to use it on a daily basis? You know, and so professionally, I've been able to see that. And, you know, it has helped me to not use my resources to purchase things that I might only use once or twice a year. You know, that's not a sound investment. But when they're showing it to you as a demo, you know, it's the latest and greatest, most awesome thing. I got to have this. You know, so that's helped me. I will say definitely my personal life has affected the way that I manage. But I'm not sure that that has much to do with the blindness.
Do you see yourself as someone who is representing the visually impaired do you feel obligated to represent?
I don't know that it is an obligation. I don't know that I'm given much of a choice. You know, I remember before I lost my eyesight, it was only about 6 months before I lost my eyesight, I was driving and I saw a blind guy walking down the street with his white cane. And looking back on it, I realized that he was navigating perfectly independently. His orientation and mobility skills were outstanding. But in my mind, all I could think was, oh my God, how horrible. Going blind must be the most horrible thing ever, or being blind. That gentleman, though, you know, the more I've been educated, demonstrated the skills of a blind person to be able to independently navigate down the street to find the store that he was going to. He didn't choose to be a representative of the blind community. You know, he chose to go to a store. I made him a representative by observing him. And I think that, you know, now that I've lost my eyesight, that's a similar path that I find myself on. Whether I choose to or not, other people are making me a representative of what blind people can do. And because of that, I think I do have an obligation to represent blind people and the skills that I know that each of us has, you know, and I do take that seriously. I want to represent the abilities of blind people in this world, not just professionally, in their personal lives as well. I want sighted people to understand that I can enjoy going to a football game just as much as they can, you know, that I can enjoy going to a concert the same way that they do, you know, and demonstrating that by living the life that I want to live. Because ultimately, I think that's all anybody wants to do is live the life they want to live.
What about you personally and pet peeves? Is there something that's like fingernails on a chalkboard, even though I'm sure I'm dating myself here? I don't think people understand what a chalkboard is anymore, but something that just irks you. It's like, please, I wish people would not do this.
You know, there's one that just always drives me nuts. I love going out and having a nice meal. And you can get a nice meal at a fancy restaurant or at a diner. It doesn't matter. But I do. I love going out to dinner. I hate when the server asks my wife or whomever I'm with what I would like to eat.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing.
You know, I'm right. Sitting right there. You can look right at me. That drives me nuts. And thankfully, I'm blessed. My wife now, she literally looks right back at them and says, I don't know. Why don't you ask him? He's sitting right there. You know, but that just, it drives me nuts, you know, that they assume that somebody else is going to be making the decisions or whatever, or able to communicate, you know, and that's the one that I really wish that people would stop, is asking somebody else to answer for me, you know, regardless of what it is, whether it's out to dinner, whether it's, you know, I'm looking at new shoes or something like that. Ask me. I'm the one that has the information, you know, don't ask somebody else and so forth.
We've lost our eyesights, not our minds.
Exactly.
still very coherent.
I didn't have much of my mind to begin with. So, you
know. Right.
So, but the eyesight has nothing to do with that.
Looking ahead at what's on the horizon for Mr. Hull and your future, are you happy about it?
I'm not only happy, I'm very excited. I mentioned getting divorced, but I have gotten remarried, and my wife and I have some amazing plans going forward. You know, we have some wonderful trips that we've already taken and some wonderful trips that we still plan to take, parts of the world that we really want to see. We're really planning on, you know, how to spend our retirement and where we want to be and what we want to do. And, you know, I can honestly say that absolutely none of it has anything to do with blindness. It has to do with what makes us happy.
Your personal story that you've shared and here on the show, do you think talking about issues or sharing our stories on a show like Sight and Vision, do you think it helps move the needle? Does it facilitate understanding? Does it serve any purpose?
Oh, it absolutely serves a purpose. I think we have to share our personal stories. You know, I can give numbers and stats. I can talk about 1% of the population being blind, that blind people have an 80% unemployment rate. You know, those numbers don't mean anything. They're just numbers. There's nothing. You can't have empathy for numbers. You have to have the personal stories. People have to connect. And we don't connect with numbers. We connect with people. You know, so we have to share our stories, our successes, and our failures, because it helps to fill in the narrative of the world. You know, without that, we might as well not be here if we're not going to participate in that narrative. You know, so I would encourage everybody, tell your story. Each of us has something to offer. You know, it might not be to a huge audience. It might be to a couple of people around a dinner table. It might be to your church group. You know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Tell your story, because it is interesting, because it's you. And the more that we can educate people on our stories, the more they can begin to understand and empathize, and the more we can move the needle.
Is there anything that you'd like to say to our listeners that you haven't yet mentioned?
You know, I guess the biggest thing that I would encourage people to consider is that blindness does not have to define who you are. You get to do that. Blindness is only one part of your story. You know, and the rest of the story is up to you. Do the work to make it a story that you like, that you are proud of. You don't have to please other people, but you definitely have to please yourself. Find a way to do that. You know, seek out people who can help you, and you know, you will find a much more enriching life. You'll be more engaged in the world around you. And, you know, ultimately, you will be a better representative of the person you want to be.
Thank you, James Hull, for talking with us today on Sight and Vision. That will end our show. Thank you, listeners, for being willing to see things differently. Welcome back to our next episode. Until then, what do you see when you can't? I am Stephen Rick, and this has been Sight and Vision. This is WIDR Kalamazoo. You're listening to 89.1 Wider FM, your source for radio evolution, online at widrfm.org.